Welcome to GM Consulting and Coach's Corner. I'm Jim Morrell, founder and president of GM, and I'll be your host. Joining me today is Dr. David Morrison of Morrison & Associates. Dr. Morrison is an organizational psychiatrist and a leader in the field of crisis management. Thanks for joining me today, Dr. Morrison. Our discussion today is on judgment and critical thinking. We've had some previous podcasts that have uncovered some saboteurs or watchouts, such as need to act or impulsivity in this pandemic crisis. We all are subject to this, and I thought our listeners might find it helpful to better understand these and other key factors that can affect their judgment or critical thinking. David, I know our listeners will benefit from your insights, and my hope today is that the listener will take away an idea or two that will benefit not only their team, their prospects, but of course them personally. In the interest of time, I propose three discussion points to frame this out. The first will be, what's different with this crisis than other crises? And David, you and I have worked through and worked together on most of these. The 87 market crash, as an example, comes to mind. The first Iraqi war, the 08, 09 recession, and of course, 9/11. And so the question will be, in the first discussion point, what's different and what's the same about this crisis that we're facing? Next, what factors other than stress and anxiety hinder critical thinking or judgment? And I think the lean-in question there would be, what behaviors can we see in ourselves that gives us a heads up or a red flag that we're heading down that path? And then finally, and most importantly, what action can our listeners take to mitigate these saboteurs to optimize better judgment or critical thinking? So let's start with the first discussion point. David, what do you see that's different about this crisis than others that you've worked through in the past?
Well, this one, of course, is in many ways more mysterious for people. When there's war or terrorists, there are human beings that are the enemies. And the economic pieces are things that business people, government people, understand. They may have disagreement, but their disagreements are based upon mainly research and experience. Few people understand what a virus is. Nobody's seen a live virus. The best we've been able to do is to see electron microscope images, which are dead. So a virus is more abstract. Then the whole idea about agent, which is intangible. We can understand it, but it's more of an intellectual, abstract thing, putting on masks, keeping distance, all of this stuff that physicians and healthcare people understand, but most people, it's mysterious, and because it is mysterious, it makes it much more difficult. Practice good judgment because it's much more ambiguous, and it's also more ominous. It raises more negative emotions, less confidence, even though if they can get themselves a belief system that is solid and somebody expresses it without doubt and calls it a hoax or something, then they can grab hold of that and feel better. And that, so that's another one of the difficulties is that virus, the epidemic, would move us more, in my opinion, out of touch with reality while feeling that very confident that we know because we're dealing with the ambiguity and the unknowable and the anxiety would make people much more vulnerable to the more primitive defenses, which are to be sure that you know what the truth is in the midst of something that is so uncertain.
Yeah, I think, and I go back to the 87 market crash, which at that time, exceeded the 29th market crash in our history. And these others in the 08 and 09 and even the Iraqi war, the first Iraqi war, there's an exception here, of course, with 9/11. But what was common to those others was there was some uncertainty, but it was the economic toll that you could almost look to and predict that would recover itself. And so there was less ambiguity, I guess. More patience was required. But it seems to me that the economic toll certainly is present in this one. I think I saw just recently, maybe it was yesterday, that unemployment, 6, almost 7 million people out of work, that exceeds the recession or depression back in the 30s. So there's an economic toll, obviously, to this thing, but there's a different piece here. You're right about this ambiguity. When does it end? The uncertainty of this thing, it's almost like the storm is coming. You just don't know when it's going to hit.
And the fact is, in some ways, it's already hit some places. And whether it hit us, we hope that it's not going to, but it just seems much more abstract. The other thing is that with the economic business has had more experience with that. People understand that. And with this vague, ambiguous, abstract thing that nobody has seen, i.e. a virus, people don't understand.
Yeah, exactly right.
When we talk about structure, one of the things that structure does is it decreases frightening fantasies. And so the scariest part of a movie, frightening movie, is when somebody goes down into a dark place and they can't see much, it's all vague and nothing happens. Because the people who write scary movies and scary novels know that they can't write anything as frightening as our own unformed fantasies. This epidemic is full of that unformed fantasies, where we can just have our fantasies can just go wild and cause all kinds of fear. And we start to clutch at any structure. So if somebody says, oh, no, this is a fake, or oh, no, this is just some sort of plot, or this doesn't make any sense, or they won't give us exactly when it's going to be over, all of that stuff. We want to have definite answers, and there are not those kind of definite answers.
Right, but we search for them anyway, and it sort of, as I understand what you're saying then, and the theme of this today is then that is the setting the stage for flawed judgment or critical thinking that's not quite accurate or clear. You mentioned lack of reality, and that leads us to a couple of the factors that have been flushed out in previous podcasts, and that's stress and anxiety, and that hinder critical thinking and judgment. What are your thoughts there, Dr. Morrison, on stress and anxiety? How does that manifest itself in behavior?
Well, there are quite a few ways. Before going there, I'd like to say just one more way that this is different than prior examples, is that everybody knows that and it sort of fits what you're just going anyway. Everybody knows that this pandemic is affecting the economy. But it's affecting much more than the economy. It's affecting leadership. It's affecting the dynamics in the family. As there's a great fear about alcoholism, drug addiction, family abuse, and so forth, going up with all this unstructured time to people at home. So it's affecting... It's not just the virus. It's not just the flu. And it's not just the economy. It's all these other things that you're talking about, Jim, that are being. Now, stress and anxiety both undermine judgment. And in my definition, the way I look at judgment is you collect all of the available relevant data, boil it down, and you act. You can see how that is different than what a decision is. Decision is, you know, you might make a very good decision that you're going to cut down on your drinking, or you're going to go on a diet, or you're going to exercise. So you've made a good decision, but then you don't do it. That would mean that you don't have good judgment, because you've made the decision, but you haven't acted. Judgment includes action. And stress and anxiety affect all of those. Anxiety is one of the more common causes of memory loss. Anxiety is going to cause us to narrow our perceptual focus and not see as much of reality that there is. Not be able to pick up as fast, if you would, nonverbal communications of a client that it wants to talk about his own distress as opposed to listening to you sell him about your whatever you're selling him. And so anxiety does that. Stress does that too. Stress also narrows our focus down to danger. So we just see what we're worried about, what the risk is. And then when it comes to boiling down, which means to analyzing it, stress undermines many different aspects of our cognitive functions, which have to do with our logical thinking. In action, stress and anxiety, as we all know, there's a good chance it would cause us to act too soon. We feel so anxious that we need to act so we can become impulsive. On the other hand, we may put off action too long, and we procrastinate. So all aspects of judgment can be affected by anxiety and stress.
You and I came together, and I came to you for some counseling. I can recall back in the first Iraqi war, and in my role then as in a leadership role, you pointed out a couple of things. You gave me good news and bad news. Maybe for the listeners, you can explain to it. You said the good news is, Jim, that you're self-reliant. The bad news is you're excessively self-reliant. So within that context, explain to the listener what you meant by that.
Well, being self-reliant is good. You can count on people like that, just like we count on you now, Jim. A lot of us do, because you are self-reliant. But if a person becomes excessively self-reliant, meaning that they really can't trust other people enough to be dependent upon them when they need to be dependent upon them, then they're not going to be as open to information. They're not going to want. They're not going to have the people around them who will disagree with them, who will tell them what they don't want to hear. They're not going to have people around them who are smarter than they are, because they want to be dependent on, or this, not just that they want to be, it's very hard. They feel very threatened if they're dependent upon somebody else. And of course, if you're going to trust somebody, you have to be dependent upon them. Therefore, trust is somewhat undermined by somebody who's excessively dependent. And clearly, during times of stress, during times of crises like we have now, trust is very important. Okay. At the same time, as you know, during times of crisis, trust is undermined. So it's a lot easier to trust people when you're in a very safe context than it is to trust people when you're in a dangerous context. Therefore, it's even more important for the leader to be able to be trustworthy and to be able to trust.
Yeah, I just to put this in context with that Iraqi war, we had taken on a significant position in Treasury securities just prior to the Scud missiles announced that they were flying into Israel. And the market, the bid side of the market, just went to hell in a handbasket at the time. I mean, there was no bid side to our position. And so rather than depend on those around me, I immediately start thinking about different options, all of which were flawed. And this was a self-reliant, I'm going to fix this thing, and I can't trust anybody to help me do it kind of mindset. And then you kind of gave me the heads up, there's a red flag here. And I went back to the team, and there was an individual, interestingly enough, that I would never listen to previously. And this individual had just graduated from business school, and we had hired her in to the trading team a few months prior. And she said, "Mr. Morrell," and I'm like, "Okay, here's something." She said that I learned in business class last semester, and I'm thinking to myself, with all these grizzled Wall Street traders standing around me, I thought, "Oh my goodness, she isn't going to do this to me." And she came up with the logical thinking. The data was accurate. And that is, in a time of crisis, what's the safest investment globally? It's what we own today. And so she said, when emotions wash over this thing and we get back to the more pragmatic look, these securities in this position will be favorable to us. But it was a classic example of just taking the time to listen to everyone on the team so that, to your point, I was collecting, I guess, the data that now I could analyze properly. Is that fair to say?
That's absolutely fair to say. And I would add one more thing. You were doing something that unfortunately isn't as common as you were using the information you got from me to make you a better leader. Because you, as you know, Jim, often you share such information with people, and they say, "Oh no, that's not so. It can't be so." But you, you accepted it and you applied it, and that made the difference.
Well, I was desperate to at the time, so I figured out very quickly that this excessive self-reliance wasn't getting us to where we're going. And I think this is the lesson, at least one of the takeaways, I hope, for the listener. This has universal application. It's not just your team, it's not just your prospects and clients, but it's also personally to those that are listening and their families in how you make these decisions. And
being excessively self-reliant can be very destructive to families. It can drive them crazy.
Yes. So what other factors or saboteurs can our listeners sort of be heads up or be watching for?
In terms of judgment and critical thinking?
Yeah. Yes.
I think one of them that's unfortunately very common, I alluded it to a little bit earlier. People don't have structure and they want structure. And so they give themselves the structure of seeing things in all none, black or white ways. Therefore, if you don't agree with me, you're my enemy. If I don't understand how this virus got here, somebody did it to me. Either you're either good or bad. So my side, my company, my family is idealized. The other side is demonized. That, of course, drives people apart. But more than that, it undermines good judgment. Because reality is not black or white. Reality is gray. And we have to get, that's why, you know, every scientific study you have, when you get all finished, even if it's an outstanding study, the author points out all the ways that it could have been wrong. Points out all the ways that it still isn't exactly right. Because we never get it exactly right. So that idea of all or none thinking is very dangerous. It's one of the things to watch for. I think the other thing is if somebody is caught in a really unpleasant, negative mood for a long time, there's no doubt that at this time, all of us, if we have any sense and if we're in touch with reality, are going to feel anxious and some fear and some trepidation and also some anger at times and stress. But for the mood to be all the time, so that when we come home and the happy puppy that runs up to greet us, we can't appreciate all the wonderful feelings that puppy is giving us. Or when our spouse is able to say something sweet. Or our spouse needs something good from us, and all we can give is a kind of a sour, bitter peace. Now, that doesn't mean that we have to be on top of our game all the time. And of course, we can be in a bad mood some of the time, and that'll make sense. But to have it all the time, then we need to say, I need to take some time out. I need to find somebody I can talk to manage this fact that I'm always angry, or I'm always afraid. Not the same as being angry or afraid 4 or 5 times a day. It's that I'm constantly in that. That'd be the other thing I'd watch for. I think if the other thing is, most of your people that I work with in the gym, most of them, have a high sense of responsibility. And that high sense of responsibility has helped them to be successful, made them good, ethical. At the same time, though, that sense of responsibility can get out of control. It can feel like they are responsible for the health of their people and of their family. They can't be responsible for the health of their people. They can work with and care about and carry their side. The health of their people is partly their people's responsibility. And if we get too strong a sense of responsibility and that we feel like we are supposed to make everything right, then we will just wear ourselves out. We'll be exceedingly stressed. But more than that, we'll become controlling because we feel that we have to make sure everybody's doing the right thing according to what our views are. Then we're controlling them. So being overly controlling, having an excessive sense of responsibility, which they would be some other signs. We can go on and on. Rigid thinking would be a sign. I think that's enough to wear our audience out.
Is back to the original point, and this being self-reliant, excessively self-reliant,
yes.
This control factor, it feeds right into that. That's something I concern personally myself about. Here's one of the concerns I have, David, for my team and for our clients. And that is, in these previous crises, there has never been a loss of connection. We've been able to get on the road and get out there and pat someone on the back, shake their hand, give them a hug or whatever it might be, to communicate effectively. And in one of the strengths, comforts I've always had, is I've always been willing to do that and have been able to do that effectively. Now, I can't even see my own team, George and Colleen and Hef. We communicate on a regular basis. We're doing these podcasts with friends and associates and folks like yourself. But man, I got to tell you that it really has taken a tool away that I've always depended on. Now I can't even go out and see people. And I've been hiding out in my man cave here, and for the foreseeable future, we'll continue to do so. So. How do we, that brings us to the next and final piece, what actions can our listeners take, maybe to close that gap? Personally, that's my concern. But our listeners, they have teams, they have prospects and clients, they have their own family, and some may even be distanced from their family. Kids are in college or school that are remaining in that area or whatever it might be. Moms and dads that might be in a nursing home or what, I don't know, but it can impact the family as well. So what action can we take? What advice do you have for our listeners to make those connections?
Okay. Let me just give a little bit of background. What to support what you just said, because what you just said is exactly right. That's one of the things you recommend, is have more relationships do decrease levels of stress, which undermine judgment and so forth. There is a hormone that probably most people have heard about now. It's called oxytocin. It's been called the cuddly hormone. It's much more complex than that. What it does is when starts around birth, but for adults, children, when you hold or hug someone, it creates oxytocin. And oxytocin has a lot of very important aspects in the brain. One of the things is that it diminishes the stress hormones, the very thing we want. The other is that it causes the secretion of opioids and the marijuana compounds that we make ourselves. So it causes pleasure. So that idea that you said about holding somebody, touching somebody, that's exactly right. And that's what we're unable to do now. So what can you do? Well, one, if you got a dog, you can hug your dog because you're not going to get coronavirus from the dog. Or if you got an affectionate cat, you can do this. So if you got a pet, that holding is going to be helpful in terms of the your body chemistry. Next, I would say that what they found out is that if people just think about people that they love, that increases the oxytocin in their body. That just think about the people that you love, that will increase the oxytocin. So that means spending time thinking about those people that you said you can't be loving, or while you're sitting there across the room from them, making sure that you're very much in tune with them, that you're not thinking about what you have to do at work, that you're not thinking about some other thing, but you're thinking about them, and you're trying to get in touch with what their emotions are, what it's like to be them. And that will help with the relationship piece. And of course, the last thing I would say, that you can do some of this, it looks like, and we're probably going to learn more of it over the internet. But you have to work harder. Really stay in tune, because you don't have the visual now. You only have the voice and the way things are phrased to get in touch with the person emotionally. So work to do that and make sure you are not multitasking at the time. Make sure that when you're listening to them, you are listening to them. Now, I would say if you got your family and if you got yourself a place where you can do it and you got a scotch, you know, that can be something you're doing while you're listening. Maybe if you can, you got yourself a cigar, and you're sitting there smoking a cigar and drinking scotch, that's not multitasking, because you can do that while you're involved with the other person. But if you're thinking about activities, thinking about duties, you're thinking about categorization, all those things will undermine this. Do you have anything that you would add, Jim?
Well. I think let me try to recap this as best I can. And on our first discussion point, David, the differences in this crisis and the 87 crisis and so forth, the differences, there are more similarities than differences, with the exception of the threat to our personal health. But it's the lack of structure. It's not perceiving reality correctly. Feeds into this no differently now than it did in the 08 or 09 recession, as an example. In terms of what other factors, other than stress and anxiety, that affect critical thinking or judgment, it's this feeling of self-reliant and collecting data that is not exactly accurate. And I think I'm back to what I thought you said about the three simple rules of thumb is to acquire the data accurately. So the self-reliant thing is a red flag if you're not aware of that. The second is to analyze it. Then if you have the right data, you can analyze it correctly. And then the third and final piece is to act. And suggestions you have that really address personally my own concerns, and that's loss of connection. And so what you're saying here is to work on relationships, to work through the internet, even though it's harder to do, to listen to the client, to the teammate, to the member of the family, and really listen to hear. Are those fair sort of captures of what we've been talking about, David?
Absolutely, Jim. One thing that we did not talk about that I would like to add is also it's very tempting if you don't go to work and you just stay home, just not have any structure.
Okay, structure.
You need
okay.
to set structure for the family and for yourself. That has to do with when you go to sleep and when you wake up. It's very tempting to say, well, I don't have to work tomorrow, I'll wake up. No, we found out that for good sleep hygiene, you need to wake up at the same time every day, even on weekends. So set yourself a structure. And children need routines if you've got children. Relationships need routines. Your pets need routines. So set up your routine and build a structure. Part of your routine can be every breakfast to say, okay, what are we going to do today? And lay out a plan that sets out a structure for the day. That's the only thing that I think needs to be added.
Okay, then your advice on this. We have a 6-year-old grandson that's with us now. Should we ask him what he thinks we should do during the day? I mean, should he be involved in this? I suppose you're saying he should, I guess.
Yes, of course. Let him participate because that's going to help him learn. It also helps him have some sense of mastery. It's also a structure that every day, and I know you and your wife, you would just do excellent with that.
So I guess to carry this further for the listener, other than their family and that, every member of their team should be part of the conversation. Every client and relationship building should be part of helping develop a plan or whatever. Maybe I'm taking a little bit too far, but
no,
it sounds
to me. You've gone exactly where I would think. I mean, that would be what I would say. Everybody's got their own way they do things. But what I've heard from some of my clients has been, is that every morning they get on the phone and they have a conference call and they talk about the day and what needs to be done. And
they get
that structure set up. And in addition to that, while you're doing that, there can also be time to say, how are you all doing, what's happening, and practice some of the relationship piece too. But set up the structure.
Excellent. Okay, well, in closing, thanks to all of you that have taken time today to listen. And if you'd like to hear more or just need to talk, reach out to us at jamconsultinggroup.com, and we're here to help. And on behalf of Dr. Morrison, our entire JAM team, and myself, stay safe and stay healthy. Thank you.